I'm Maya Grant.
And I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love, like Star Wars.
Yes, today is going to be our all Star Wars ruining episode.
All Star Wars all the time. We're going to fuck it up for you.
We are. But before we get to that, how are you doing, Maya? How was your New Year's?
It was a wonderful New Year's, and it's really important to take time off. Every time I take time off, I'm like, oh yeah, I need to do this a little bit more in my life. It was really good. How about you?
Oh, great. It's been pretty busy, largely because I guess I haven't really officially announced this publicly, but Matt and I are moving to New York at the end of January. So yeah.
Oh my God.
We spent a lot of the last few weeks in the search for an apartment. And then once we found an apartment in New York, there's like this background check. I'm pretty sure Robert Mueller is on the case. It's like there's the application process is wild. So we're still waiting to find out if we get the apartment we want. But yeah, it's like a full-time job just securing ourselves a domicile, a dwelling in New York.
Are you at all starting to get like sad? Are you all starting to get sad about leaving California?
Totally. I love Berkeley. It's wonderful here. The weather is always mild and pleasant. The people are breezily liberal to straight up socialist. It's wonderful. But I've lived in New York before. I can do it again. I'm a little softer now. I can harden back up. I'll do it. A few more drinks.
What are you drinking tonight?
Well, as part of the move, I've been trying to clear out our liquor cabinet. Regular listeners may recall that I recently finished a bottle of Amaretto.
The ongoing Amaretto saga.
Yeah, the Amaretto project, I didn't mention at the time, was part of the move. I'm just trying to clear out everything in our liquor cabinet. And I, going through our bar things, found this flask. So what I have here is a...
She's holding up the flask right now. It's really cute.
It's a like a 10-ounce, maybe 8-ounce flask that I bought in college, probably. And it's filled with liquid. And I have no recollection of filling it. So I don't know what's inside.
So you're going to be drinking mystery liquor tonight.
Well, I'm going to see what it is. I suspect that it's probably whiskey, because what else would I put in a flask? But knowing me, there's a distinct non-zero possibility that it's tequila or vodka.
I was thinking like, is it absinthe?
Oh, I wish.
Just wildly fucked up.
That'd be rad. So I've opened my flask and I'm pouring the brown liquid. It's most assuredly whiskey.
Oh, very good.
It smells pretty sweet. It's not a scotch.
All right.
It's fine. I think it's a rye. It's probably bullet rye.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is. I had my ginger ale and 7-Up on hand for mixers, but I don't even think I need it.
Well, I'm drinking an old fashioned and
nice.
Enjoying it tremendously. So today, guys, we're going to pretty much just talk about Star Wars, The Last Jedi. We're going to take a brief moment to share some listener feedback. We'll end with a little bit of weak sauce, hot and weak sauce. But for the most part, we're going to be getting into Star Wars. So I'd like to say right now, spoiler alerts. I mean, if you're not ready to hear us break it down, if you're still trying to wait, save it. Yeah. Listen to it after you see the movie. But don't complain. We're telling you right off the top. Spoiler alert. We're going to talk about every fucking thing that happens in this movie.
Yes.
Done.
So before we get to that, listener feedback.
Well, we got a very nice review from Guy Branum.
TV's own Guy Branum.
Genius comedian Guy Branum, who said that I look forward to this podcast dropping every week. Maya and Rebecca pull apart some, or ruin in the parlance of the show, some aspect of our culture with powerful intellects and even more powerful drinks. I loved the episode where they use the Mueller investigation to talk about what's satisfying about procedurals. And I can't wait to hear what they have to say about Star Wars. This is an excellent podcast. Well, thank you, Guy. We are happy to oblige.
How flattering. And we're going to give you your wish. We are going to tear Star Wars a new one for sure.
And also, we've just had some nice tweets and we're making people laugh and people are enjoying it. So we just want to say thank you. Keep listening. Before we really get into what we thought about The Last Jedi, first, I feel like we have to set up our bona fides as yes. Star Wars fans. Like, what is our relationship to Star Wars? So why should you trust us? I feel like we have to set up some basic sense of who we are as watchers of Star Wars.
I think that context will help listeners to sort of know where to place our criticism so yes. they can understand where it's coming from. Can I start?
Please do.
I am, or perhaps I should say was, a huge Star Wars fan pretty much my whole life. But I mean, everyone of our generation grew up liking Star Wars, right? Everybody's a Star Wars fan. It's the most successful movie franchise of all time. Everyone right. in the world loves Star Wars.
Right.
So to say I'm a Star Wars fan doesn't really provide a whole great deal of information. So to give some specificity to that, like, in high school, I would read the Expanded Universe books and comic books, not religiously. I didn't read all of them, but I read several of them. I considered getting a Star Wars tattoo at one point, but I'm never going to get a tattoo.
What?
But if I ever did get one, I would have got the Rebel symbol.
Wow.
I briefly flirted with the idea, but then I saw a girl in a bar with it and I was like, well, I guess not. Somebody else has it. I was a pretty intense Star Wars fan throughout my youth into my adulthood. I mean, when the prequels came out, I went and saw all of them at least 3 times in the theater. Let's say anywhere from 3 to 7 times, depending on
wow.
the movie.
Wow. So then did you also see when they re-released the original 4, 5, and 6 with the new CGI? Of course,
oh,
you were also
yeah,
there for
of
that.
Course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not the most intense Star Wars fan ever. Certainly there are people who have read all the Expanded Universe, and I haven't even seen all of the Clone Wars cartoon. I'll admit that. There's a couple seasons of Clone Wars I haven't seen. Yeah.
Whoa.
Maya's making a face of
Whoa.
Total shock at this.
Okay, so Rebecca might not be the biggest Star Wars fan, but I would definitely say that compared to her, I am most humbly not even a quarter of the way there. I just remember that whenever we went to a party in high school, it was
yes.
always playing. So I feel like I've watched those movies, 4, 5, and 6, 300,000 times. I saw the re-releases in the theater. I saw, actually, you know what? I only saw one in the theater. Jar Jar Binks really drove me away from it. Like, Jar Jar Binks was so horrifying that I was like, I cannot, I cannot. But I feel like I am your typical fan. I feel like I can stand in for like your typical Joe Star Wars fan. It is woven mm-hmm. into the fabric of who I am as a viewer, as a kid, as a
it's
person.
It's such a part of the culture,
absolutely.
You know, the iconography of it and the myth making of it.
Oh, sure. And it's also part of like part of the big culture. Those movies came out when we were just born. The first Star Wars came out in 77. Yeah. So I feel like the moment in the culture that it was changing was the moment that we were entering the culture.
Yeah.
It's like you love it. You just love it. It doesn't matter whether it's like the greatest thing in the world or you devoted your whole life to it. I love it in an uncomplicated way.
That's a good way of putting it.
So I feel like we're coming to it with some deep love. Rebecca has a lot, much more of like the nerd bona fides than I do. But I think that we definitely are coming to this movie wanting it to work out. I think that that's the biggest description, but also not being so devoted to any particular outcome. As yes. long as it's solid, I'm with it. I'll go with you. I'm ready to be taken on a journey.
Agree. I am with you. I have been waiting for these sequels for a long time.
Totally.
Way before the prequels came out, when I first learned that Lucas had originally envisioned it as a 9-film series. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I had a lot of hopes for a long time, for many, many years, but not specific hopes in terms of having an idea about where I wanted it to go or what I wanted to happen, but more just excitement about the idea of seeing these characters that I love in this universe that I love.
Absolutely. Totally.
So all of that said, I can confidently, without doubt, say at this point that I am no longer a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing for me right now. The Disney has kind of ruined it for me here. I didn't love The Force Awakens, but I had hoped that The Last Jedi would sort of redeem it, maybe get it back on track, do something new and interesting. And I was very, very disappointed.
Yeah, I think that we both were not fans of The Last Jedi. I think I can say that. I actually really enjoyed The Force Awakens because I felt like it was trying to reset something from what might have been the disappointment with the prequels. And so I felt like it was resetting something up where it was like, we're going to go back to the old school. We're going to take it back. And I was super there for it. I was super entertained by it. I fell for it. But I did spend several days after seeing The Force Awakens being like, wait a second. They just copied the plot.
Yes.
From episode 4.
Beat for beat.
Beat for beat. Oh, God. Oh. And so I was hoping that like, 7 reset it, so that 8 and 9 can take it somewhere different. Like, I had some hopes going into The Last Jedi, and I think we were disappointed. And before we get into what we liked and what we didn't like, I think that Rebecca wanted to talk about one thing that she's noticing in the conversation around it.
Yeah. So something that stands out to me, it hasn't been as bad the past few days, but immediately after the film came out and the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes was fairly dismal. There was a lot of, I noticed, think pieces and tweets from people about why don't people like it? And a lot of people seem to feel the need to explain away why other people don't like it.
Right.
And their explanations rarely point to the actual faults in the film.
Right, right.
Rarely have I heard, if at all, someone saying, well, I think people don't like it because the pacing is a little strange and the stretch.
Right, right.
But instead, they sort of psychoanalyze or question the motives of those criticizing the film.
Yes.
And I find that these descriptions don't apply to me. Like, I am a pretty severe critic of this movie. I just want to make reference to, like, there was a piece on Vox that was like the Star Wars The Last Jedi backlash explained. And I'm using it as an example. It's not the only piece that was written. But they sort of break it down, all the different reasons that people seem to not like it. And I need to get this out here because I want to establish off the bat that these are not the reasons I disliked it.
Yes.
So, okay, one of the bigger ones is the idea that the film is too progressive, that it was SJW agenda pushing, blah, 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 because there were women in charge and characters who are people of color and all the white guys were wrong most of the time, which is all true.
Yes.
But was actually arguably a strength of the film.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it goes without saying, but just in case, the reason we disliked it has nothing to do with that.
No.
Another criticism is, this is the one that drives me nuts, that it departs from fan theories or the things that happen in the extended universe. So the idea here is that fans are disliking The Last Jedi because they had an expectation. They had something built up in their minds about what they expected this movie to be or wanted it to be. And they're angry or disappointed or frustrated that it didn't turn out that way, that the movie went in some new direction they weren't expecting. So let me be clear. I wanted the movie to go in a new direction. I wanted it to give me things that I didn't expect.
Yep.
More than anything.
Yep.
Plot holes. Okay. So this is really interesting to me. I found this with The Force Awakens, that when you start getting into a conversation with people about why you disliked it, oftentimes it's really easy to fall into a conversation about plot holes. And you get into a weird argument about the plausibility of things.
Right.
It's like, it's Star Wars.
It's Star Wars. We're living in this insane science fiction universe. Like,
yeah. I am not at all looking for plausibility per se. Like, someone on Twitter pointed out that in space, there's no friction. So if the rebel ship, the cruiser had run out of fuel, it would have just kept moving continuously in the same direction.
Right.
Without stopping. But to me, that's like as if space physics have ever applied in Star Wars.
Come
on. I don't give a crap about that. Like, I'm not going to nitpick shit like that. What bothers me isn't plot holes per se. It's that I want the plot to be well constructed.
Yes.
I want the character motivations to make sense. I want their actions to flow logically from their motivations. I want them to have a journey that goes somewhere. I want the setups to have payoffs. I want each moment to flow logically in a cause and effect chain from the last moment in a way that makes me feel like each moment is inevitable.
Right.
That's good storytelling.
Yes.
So it's not about realism or plausibility, just good storytelling.
Yes.
Okay. So one of the big criticisms of the criticism is you didn't like that Luke wasn't an infallible hero. You just were disappointed that Luke went in a direction you didn't expect him to go. And according to this Vox piece, this goes to a deeper philosophical difference between people who wanted to see orthodoxy challenged, I guess, and those who maybe didn't. God, I couldn't disagree more with this. Maybe we'll get into more depth with that later. I was not satisfied with the arc that Luke was given, but it's not because I need Luke to be heroic. I just need him to be Luke.
Yeah.
I just want internal logic.
Yeah.
Not real world logic, internal
logic.
Well,
especially because if you're going to have this leap in time where we're meeting him again after so many years, where all these different things have happened, we know that there's something with Kylo Ren. We know that there's something at stake with the Jedi. I'll pretty much go anywhere with you in terms of what that is with Luke.
But you have to take me there.
But you have to take me there. That's on you as a storyteller to make it convincing, exciting.
Yes.
I just read something about how, like, if you want to write a novel, have your character have a desire and then don't give it to them for 600 pages.
Perfect.
That's what a movie is. You have characters who have objectives that are in conflict with each other. And the given circumstances create high stakes. I feel like everything that we are asking of this movie is related to basic, good fucking storytelling. These are the values that we are bringing to Star Wars.
Exactly. We're going to get into ways that we feel this movie failed. But first, I think perhaps we should address the things we liked about it.
Sure.
I think we both agree that what we liked most about the film was the dynamic between Kylo Ren and Rey.
Yes.
First of all, I thought Kylo Ren was probably the biggest strength of the film. I didn't love his character in The Force Awakens. He was kind of whiny and emo in a way that didn't draw me in, but
yeah, you're like, oh, Dad doesn't like me, so I'm gonna make him. Yeah, like, yeah, I wasn't buying it in The Force Awakens.
It didn't feel like particularly threatening.
Not at all.
They stepped that up really nicely in this film, and his conflictedness takes on a new shade, and his objectives become clearer and more interesting. He just becomes a much more compelling character.
I completely agree. I also feel like the erotics of the Kylo Ren-Rey relationship was fantastic, because what you're seeing is here are two very powerful beings. So they meet in a place where other people can't meet them.
Yeah.
And I feel like that sets up a really interesting tension where it's like, oh, this person is going to understand me better than other people who are putatively on my side. So we're forced into this interaction with each other. And it was kind of sexy. And like, that to me was the strength of the movie.
Completely agree.
And actually, that happening kind of under the eyes of Luke, who's clearly kind of fucked up. Like, that was fantastic, because she's going there for help, but then she's realizing this guy's kind of broken. He's not giving me the help that I need. That was the core around which everything else in the movie should have been built. And you might say that it was, but I thought that the noise of everything else undermined that, which I thought was actually very interesting.
I would tend to disagree with the idea that that was actually the focus of the film, or even that Ray was the protagonist of the film. But let's continue. We have a couple more things we liked. I think we both really liked Rose Tico, the new character.
Big time.
The mechanic. She was well played, cute, fun.
She was also like incredibly charismatic and fabulous. I was a huge fan.
I liked that the film attempted to address some big ideas and themes, particularly the attempt to talk about class and politics.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the effort in that regard.
Also, we have to appreciate the fact that a lot of the main characters were women and people of color. Hey, hey, what's up? And
that was awesome.
Like, everything that you wanted out of the movie didn't fucking fall apart because it wasn't all white guys. Hey, what's up? Nice.
Yeah. The problems with the movie had nothing to do with it not being all white guys.
No. In fact, the women and people of color and diverse casting, I actually thought the actors were wonderful actors.
Yeah.
Like, whether the movie served them is different in terms of the plot. But in terms of the casting, shit, they got some fantastic people.
Anything else we liked about the movie?
I think that there was a lot of visual interest in it. I think it was visually very pretty. I think the scene where Admiral Holdo sacrifices herself and that shot where it goes silent, that
very
was
cool.
Very well crafted.
Imagine if it had had any emotional impact.
I know. Imagine if we had gotten to know Holdo enough that we actually gave a shit. Yeah. Instead, I'm watching it being like, oh, that was supposed to be the moment that I gave a shit. There was a lot of cool looking shit, and there were a lot of fucking fantastic looking people in the cool looking shit. As one would expect from a movie that has that high of a budget. Come on now.
I think this makes a decent transition moment into talking about what sucked and what I really didn't like about the movie. And this is not one of my biggest complaints, but you mentioned there were a lot of cool looking people. And I felt like, as much as that is true, there were also a lot of bafflingly not cool looking people. When Laura Dern's character, Admiral Holdo, comes on, I saw what they were trying to do there. And I appreciated what they were trying to do. I appreciated this idea that she's going to be very feminine and even frail looking. So they put her in drapey jersey fabrics.
Yeah, and what?
Purple hair. But it looked to me like, honestly, like if I had said to my grandma, "Grandma, make me a Star Wars costume." And she'd be like, okay. And this is her idea of what that is. Or like, you go to one of those pop-up Halloween stores and, you know, that opens at the empty storefront at your mall every year, and you buy like space princess commander outfit.
I don't even think it was space princess commander. Honestly, it felt to me like what Israeli ladies of a certain age wear. Oh my God.
Totally.
Rebecca almost spit out her face right there. There's this way in which it's like, Israeli ladies of a certain age, which is like anyone over 40, wear like long drapey things. If her hair had been henna instead of purple, she would have been just some like Tel Aviv lady.
I couldn't understand the hair. I just didn't get the bad purple wig. And the same thing, like when they go to the casino on Canto Bight, to me, the way the characters were designed, the clothing and the costumes and the makeup, it looked like, I don't know, maybe when you used to get on Star Tours, because, you know, when you're waiting to get on, they have like the safety video. And there's people with weird hairstyles because they're like, right. It's Star Wars. Weird hairstyles.
Right.
And there was very little in that scene or any of the scenes that made me have a feeling like you had in the cantina scene in episode 4, where you're like, wow, look at these weird creatures. That's so cool. It was just sort of like, I see that you're trying to do Star Wars and don't quite get it.
Right. Though that's not the most important part about why
it's a
minor
quibble.
It's a minor quibble. I think that for me, the key thing about what was disappointing about this movie is that I feel like it was a bunch of big, flashy scenes with no time spent dealing with the real stakes that we're dealing with.
I very much agree. I felt that just narratively, there was no there. The movie keeps showing you these sort of consequences, especially particularly of Poe's actions. People are dying and like it's there, but it doesn't feel like a consequence.
Poe Dameron has fucking mutinied.
Right.
His mutiny ends up being a huge fuck up. The few members of the rebellion who are left are like half of them are dead. And what happens? Because Leia's back and she like quells the mutiny is that Leia and Admiral Holdo are like, yeah, but he's kind of cute. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? What? He has just fucked up. He's just killed half of the few people that you have left to try to survive. Like, he has fucked it all up.
Poe Dameron is a monster in this movie. He is a complete monster. The movie opens, the whole opening scene with Rose's sister's spectacular death is him getting a whole bunch of people killed. I mean, you can make an argument that it was a worthwhile sacrifice, but let's contextualize and remember that he's explicitly, deliberately disobeying Leia's direct order when he does it. And he comes back from this mission having disobeyed the general's order and getting lots of people killed. And she's like, slap on the face, you're demoted. And he's like, what? So here's a moment that I think is characteristic because I think the movie is signaling to me that I'm supposed to be on Poe's side. So that, I mean, later in the movie, I can feel like I learned a lesson around that or something, but I'm not on Poe's side from the beginning because I don't understand why he's hovering his X-Wing right in front of a Star Destroyer waiting to get killed. I don't understand why he's disobeying Leia's orders. I don't understand why he's getting people killed.
And then I don't understand why when he comes back, he's like, why did you demote me? Instead of being like, oh my God.
Oh shit, I fucked up. I got a bunch of people killed.
Like, he has no understanding of his own stakes, which makes him a fucking sociopath. Like,
right?
He
just doesn't feel
bad at all. Like, he should be in some corner rocking back and forth being like, I am the reason that the rebellion is fucked up forever. Like, that would have been interesting because that would have meant that the movie was taking the stakes seriously.
Yeah, you can't have the hero commit mutiny in a Star Wars movie. The hero of the rebellion commit mutiny against rebellion leaders. And then he's wrong, and you can see that he's wrong. And there's no consequence for it. I mean, there's consequences to other people, to the rebellion. They all get fucking destroyed. And the ultimate thing he learns is that, like, wait a minute, no. I don't have to rush in with my dick out. I could run away. I could follow those crystal dogs. And this is the big fucking lesson he learned. I'm like, well, I'm glad only like, I don't know, 500? I don't know how many people died to teach you that fucking lesson.
Right. I feel like with our main characters in 4, 5, and 6, you see them, they run away, they come back. Like, you see them feel the consequences of their fuck up or of their other given circumstances that they have to manage.
For example, when Luke ignores both Yoda and the Force Ghost of Ben Kenobi and leaves his training on Dagobah to go try to rescue his friends impulsively, because that's his flaw, right?
Right.
That's what he needs to overcome. He goes and gets his ass whooped by Vader. It's a big fucking fuck up. He falls right into the trap. And that movie ends with Luke being like, well, I fucking fucked up. And you as an audience are like, Luke fucking fucked up. And the heroes are on the ropes. And this sucks.
Right.
And the Empire is powerful. And so when they go into the next movie and Luke walks in and all black and shit, you don't even have to say more than that. You already know. You can put together the pieces and understand where he's been the past amount of time.
Absolutely.
What he's been learning. And the black is genius because you also understand the conflict and the danger that Luke might turn to the dark side and all these things. It's all there in a few deft strokes. It doesn't have to get into anything in great detail. When Alderaan is destroyed in the first movie, you don't have to like have a whole storyline where we get to know a little stable boy on Alderaan or whatever the fuck. You just have Leia there being like, don't do it. Alderaan is peaceful. We have no weapons. And you get it. They're a peaceful planet. They're her home planet. Her family's there. Boom, it's destroyed. And Obi-Wan has his moment. Millions of voices cried out and were suddenly silenced. And you get it. And you understand the evil of the Empire. And you understand the meaningful, real consequences of their tyranny.
So this is exactly where I feel like The Last Jedi was so disappointing, because I feel like we see that it could have very easily been different in terms of setting up a conflict in a way where there are consequences, that there are stakes, where it takes us in a new place. And nowhere was I more disappointed. And this comes back to the part of the movie that we loved. Okay. So you have Kylo Ren.
Mm-hmm.
He kills the sort of emperor character. He saves Rey. They defeat all of these people from the Empire together. He turns to her. He says, you are just some child of some poor assholes. You have this force. I have just said fuck you to the Emperor. We have this connection. I am holding out my hand to you. Let us start anew. Let's start a new world where all of these things that we have done before, we're saying fuck it to all of it. And when he said that, I was like, do it, Rey. Do,
do it.
Like, this is interesting, because he's saying the context of all of the things that we have had set up are right there for you to really fuck all of that up. That would be a really interesting problem to solve. If they're saying all this Empire versus Rebellion is done, and instead the two most powerful beings left in this greater universe join forces to create something new. Yes. I was like, bring it on. That is interesting. I was super rooting for him in that moment. I was entirely rooting for him in that moment.
So I'm totally with you. And I think this goes to an interesting question. I see a lot of people talking about how they feel this movie did something fresh or new, that it took Star Wars in a new direction, that it was unexpected and defied their expectations. I didn't see very much, if anything, that was really fresh or new or different in this movie. I didn't see it take Star Wars in any new direction that I didn't expect. And narratively speaking, pretty much everything turned out the way I expected it to.
And I feel like that moment where the new thing could have happened, but then Rey's like, no, but you're dark. I feel like that says everything about what this movie was. It made a show of being new mm-hmm. while actually being very cowardly in its choices.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that's exactly correct. It even, I would say, in a lot of ways, reestablished a lot of the old things, a lot of the lore from the old movies and tropes from the old movies, rather than shattering them or even really even bending them in any interesting way.
So movies 1, 2, and 3, I think were just bad movies. I have to say, I think they were bad, bad movies. After okay. Jar Jar Binks, I was like, I cannot with these movies. However, mm-hmm. I saw you write about this on Twitter and I was like, they were trying to at least do something new. They were trying to expand the universe. They were trying to tell a new story. They were trying to say, like, look at how evil can come out of, like, bad bureaucratic maneuverings. And I felt like episode 7, were the filmmakers saying, well, we're going to go back to the old school. All the ways in which episodes 1 through 3 were kind of shitty. Fuck that. We're going to be old school, like mm-hmm. Star Wars. And right. I felt like in this movie, we saw the limits of that. Because yeah. by trying to stick to what people are going to like, they didn't go anywhere new. And so I was just like bored. I do have a new appreciation for 1 through 3 because they were trying to at least tell new stories in this universe.
Yes. And bring you new parts of the universe. We can get into a whole conversation about whether George Lucas is or ever was a good filmmaker. But film is a collaborative medium, and I am not a subscriber to auteur theory. Whatever happened in episodes 4, 5, and 6, the collaboration yielded films that, you know, by objective standards have many flaws, right? 4, 5, and 6 have plenty of awkward dialogue and wooden performances and weird scene transitions and cornball, obviously aimed at children humor. Like, there's plenty you could say make them not great films. But there is a reason that they have become so iconic. They occupy the place that they do in our cultural imagination for a reason. They built this world that was familiar because it was based on hero legends and Eastern philosophy and World War II movies and all of these familiar things, but also felt fresh and new and exciting. They built a world that in a few clear but brief strokes you could understand completely and yet feel intrigued by. There was magic there. I remember as a child being fascinated by the idea of the Jedi and what they could do or couldn't do and what the Force was. This was a magical idea. It was filled with mystery and excitement. I don't feel any of that mystery or excitement when I watch these new movies. I feel no sense of mystery at all. I feel no sense of magic. It's just not there for me.
But I actually feel like in that moment where I was so rooting for Rey and Kylo Ren to sort of go off together and with their power create a new world, mm-hmm. I absolutely could have gone there. I was willing to go there. So I feel like that's the moment where you say, actually, they didn't
deliver it.
They didn't deliver it because they were afraid. All of the things that people think that they were like rebooting or saying like we're making it different. So he doesn't wear a mask anymore. That isn't big enough of a change. In some ways, it revealed to me the ways in which all of those symbols and the like
yeah.
were never as important to me as the storytelling.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to get my head around what surprised people, what made them feel like they were seeing something different, and I'm not understanding it.
Not at all.
When Kylo Ren kills Snoke, it is not surprising. That is pretty much the only way that scene can end because he's not going to kill Rey. Also, it's well established by the first 6 movies that Sith apprentices kill their masters.
Right.
that's just part of the lore. That's what they do. And I think people feel shocked because J.J. Abrams set up this mystery of like, who's this Snoke guy? Don't you want to know? Similar to like Rey's parents. J.J. Abrams set it up like, ooh, you're going to find out who her parents are. And then this movie was like, ah, fuck that. Snoke is nobody. He doesn't matter. He's dead. Rey's parents were nobodies. And that's fine. But that's not actually being surprising. That's fucking your audience. That's a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
That's, here's a mystery, we're not going to solve it. It's not actually narratively going in an interesting direction. Now, I do kind of think that Rey's parents not being anybody interesting is a cool direction to go. But the idea that a Jedi could come from humble beginnings and doesn't have to have Jedi parents is like well established. Yoda doesn't have famous Jedi parents. Obi-Wan didn't, that we know of. That's not a part of Jedi lore in general. It just happens to be the plot of the first six movies centering on the Skywalker clan. So, okay, I guess you're going in a different direction if you want to focus on someone who's not a member of the Skywalker clan, except you're not really, because Ben Solo, who is a member of the Skywalker clan, is actually your most compelling and dynamic character, and definitely the one that this movie is most about. The movie's not about Rey. She's almost peripheral to the plot. She's a catalyst for other people's plots, but she doesn't actually do or accomplish anything in this film. She doesn't even have a journey. She doesn't learn anything or grow or overcome obstacles internally. She's just kind of there.
Also, at the end of it, I wasn't so invested in Rey's parents being anything. So this is another way in which the things that they're worried about managing in terms of viewer expectations, if you'd said, no, Rey's just really fucking good, she just has the Force, I would have been like, all right.
Yeah.
In this movie, the things that would have set up the last movie so well are that Poe's mansplaining attempt to be the hero leads to real, savage, internal psychological consequences.
Yes.
Where he is like, oh my God, I have super fucked up and caused the end of the world, and I'm going to be like drunk in this corner forever.
Right. And then, you know, he's like, I'm so sorry, Leia, fucked up. And she goes, get the fuck out.
Yeah, that's
she
right.
She says, you are not part of this resistance. And instead of ending with like, as long as there's one spark of hope, everything's going to be okay. Instead of that shit, you end with like, well, that guy's toxic masculinity just fucked us good. And are we even going to survive?
Which means that he then has a huge obstacle to overcome to earn his way back into the last movie. And that is what, that is real stakes in cinematic storytelling.
Yes. And if you want to do something different, if you want to go in that different direction, have Rey take Kylo Ren's
hand. Absolutely.
Kylo Ren 100%. Spends a whole movie saying, you got to kill the past.
Like, it's not like he was saying, join the dark side. He was saying, fuck both sides. And if they had gone off together, and both sides would have been like, wait, what?
But this is how the movie just reified everything that people seem to think it was somehow undermining. It ends with Luke being like, no, the Jedi are still going to survive. And he obviously means Rey. And it's like, yes, Rey is going to be a Jedi. Fine. But that's not doing anything new. Where's the new? Oh, Yoda burns down the tree, but then there's a shot. A lot of people missed it, but there's a shot in the Millennium Falcon where you see that Rey rescued the Jedi books.
Which, by the way, we never even have heard of the Jedi books, and all of a sudden they're important so that when he burns them, it matters. What?
Yeah.
And I felt this way about Thor Ragnarok. Like, you're signaling something is important for 10 seconds. But you have not set it up for me so that I'm invested in it at all. So whether it gets destroyed or doesn't get destroyed, I'm not going to buy into it.
Yeah, who gives a shit about the books? I couldn't care less if they get destroyed.
Absolutely. I'm like, oh, okay, so the power of the Force is bigger than these books? Great. What?
I mean, that makes sense. But that's what the themes were so muddled. And I think there was an enormous opportunity here to actually do something really exciting. Why not have either Rey or Luke be like, yeah, the Jedi way is over. The Jedi are done. They failed. They allowed Darth Vader to rise and Emperor Palpatine to rise. Their whole dogma of light side, dark side, and this duality is too rigid.
Totally.
There's a new way. There's another way. Kill the past. Do it. Like, do it. If you're going to talk about killing the past, don't just put those words in the mouth of the villain of the film.
But also, if you're going to talk about killing the past, I feel like they went a long way towards making Kylo Ren not a villain. So then fulfill it. If they run off together mm-hmm. and use their joint power to make a new world, then you have something really complex and interesting. And I feel the same way about like Finn and Rose. Like, I was so with them. And yet I felt like it didn't get to like go to the new places that I wanted it to go. They're both such talented actors. I actually feel like this movie set up a lot of things, but right when it was about to make the brave move, it pulled back. And I feel like that's where it failed. It makes me not want to see the last one because I feel like you could have set this shit up to make it so good, and you did not because you were pussies.
I honestly, there were at least two times during Last Jedi that I thought about walking out of the theater. I'm not kidding. And it's not like because I was like offended or something. I was just bored. One of the scenes is when Finn and Rose are on Canto Bight and they're riding around on the race bunnies or whatever and destroying the city. And I was like, I am so bored. I do not care about this plot line. I do not care about this place. They've told me that these people are bad because they're rich and,
right,
and so
right.
forth. But like, you can't just tell me stuff. You have to make me
show
feel
me.
It.
Show me.
Show me. Yeah. And this movie was so tell, don't show. Everything was just like dialogue, dialogue. Like, this is this and that is that. But not making me feel any of it. I thought about leaving the theater. And I had to say to myself, like, you can't walk out of a Star Wars movie. You have to watch the whole thing. It's a Star Wars movie.
Now, the one thing I will say in terms of the one place where it succeeded for me or might have hit me vibrationally in a thematic way okay. is that the idea of the rebellion, which starts at like 300 people and at the end is like 10.
Sure.
It did feel a little bit like living in Trump's America.
I get that. I get that.
Like, it did feel like a meditation on the fact that even once you think you've defeated the fucking Republicans, there's just like, there's nothing you can do. And in terms of like, well, how does this world exist? It's like, how do they even have those bombers? If there are only 300 of them left, they don't have factories. Like, mm-hmm. I ended up thinking about a lot of those things, but for sure, I definitely felt like, but we have most of the votes. Why are we losing to these people? That was very much present for me, that this was a meditation okay. on Trump's America.
I think I would have felt more that way if I had felt moved by the movie at all.
I think that I was pretty high, and I think that I was looking for, no, once I gave up on the story, give me a good Hollywood movie, three-act structure, conflicting objectives, bring it on. Once I gave up on that, I could just feel like, oh, this is like being in Trump's America, and I could enjoy that. Not enjoy yeah. that, but I could be like,
No, appreciate it.
Appreciate that.
I can see that. And, you know, there's a moment where the Resistance are sending out a distress beacon, and one of the Resistance people says something like, our beacon has been received, you know, by multiple people, but no one has responded. And I think there was potential there to convey that. And I think the movie was trying to convey that idea that there's these wealthy people partying on the casino planet and they just sell weapons to whoever and don't
yes.
give a shit.
Yes. And exactly
that there's this whole galaxy of member planets of the Republic and they don't give a shit. They're just watching this new order take over.
They're not voting.
They're not voting. Fine, but to me that was just lost in the crapulence of the overall film.
Yeah.
And it was it was so accomplished through telling and not showing. And not only did they tell, but like that moment I just mentioned, one character says that, and then the next character repeats it in different words. One character says, "They've received our signal, but no one is responding." And then someone else is like, "So they're hearing our distress call, but they're not coming to help." And I was like, "That's what she just said." That's just bad movie making.
All right, guys.
We got to wrap up. We don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but I think we should really quickly like list off some of the people that we think deserve hot or weak sauce awards.
We're going to be super quick about this.
Okay.
It's been a few weeks since we've been with you, so we have a lot of things to point out. We're just going to knock them out right there.
They're mostly weak sauce. They're mostly weak.
So let's get the hot sauce out of the way. This is just
okay.
Quick pleasure. I'm always a fan. Every year at the end of the year, Talking Points Memo gives something called the Golden Duke Awards, where it's the awards for meritorious achievements in the nutty and the corrupt in our politics. And it's named after our childhood congressman from San Diego, Randy Duke Cunningham.
Oh my God, I remember Randy Duke
Cunningham. Yeah, that's why it's called the Golden Dukes, because Randy Duke was like put in jail for his like corrupt, like bribery.
Oh, wow.
So that's why they named it after him. So I always take a specific pleasure in it. And they have Susie Bright and they have judges and they have like guest judges talk about like politics of the year. And they sort of change the awards every year. So this year, one of the awards is like best insane press conference. Like they always have like best scandal local venue, best scandal central national venue. Anyway, it's a pleasure and it makes us really understand the insanity of 2017. So go enjoy it. Randy Duke Cunningham, San Diego. What?
Oh, at least we have a few claims to fame. Good old San Diego. Now for our weak sauce awards.
Start off. Oh, me? All right. Okay. So we got to start with the fucking Republican Senate voting for a tax bill that was nonsense, that was like badly written, that was obviously to just please wealthy donors, that was like bad policy.
Oh, can I give a special fucking shout out to Paul Ryan and these guys patting Donald Trump on the back and acting like he's their guy, so they can get their fucking Medicare cuts. I just want to fucking kick them in the nuts, these guys.
And a little sub-weak sauce to Susan Collins, who should have fucking saved the day, because she did save the day when it came to not cutting Obamacare. She feels like when she's being criticized for voting for the tax bill, it's sexism. That people have higher expectations of her because she's a woman. She said it was really terribly fucking sexist. No, Susan Collins, you actually saved the day before. That's why we are looking to you again.
We have higher expectations of you because you once showed a shred of decency.
Right. So weak sauce.
Weak sauce.
Weak sauce.
I want to add weak sauce to Vice magazine in general. Recently, some former employees came out with revelations, shocking revelations, that it's a horrible boys' club full of sexism and racism.
Well, I think we could do an entire episode about Vice magazine and the sort of bullshit, sexiness, wild stuff that it's like, like that's a whole...
Oh, I'm so cool because I don't give a shit about being respectful of women.
Yeah. All right. Weak sauce, Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle in his latest special is like, what? I don't understand. Like, entertainment's a hard business. These women are complaining that Louis C.K. showed them their dick. They think that's why they're not successful. Oh my God, you are so purposefully fucking missing the point, motherfucker. Like, come on. And the whole point about this is that actually until the Me Too moment, were these women complaining? No, they weren't saying anything. They were keeping their heads down and they were like trying to be successful in this totally sexist framework.
I mean, not to mention, if we know five women came forward, how many women actually got like shoved into a bathroom or had him block their exit from a hotel room? They haven't come forward. Dave Chappelle,
weak. Like,
it's
and people
weak.
Are like,
know better.
And people are like, oh no, but he's being provocative. I'm like, no, he's no. not provoking shit. Like, I'm not interested.
No, that's not provocative. That's the opposite of that.
It's so reactionary. It's actually, and I feel like we have a whole thing to say about this. Like, the way that Chris Rock talks about women and the way Dave Chappelle talks about women, their desires for women to just be servile objects. And then mm-hmm. when they complain about women being gold diggers, and I'm like, but those are the women you're interested in. You're interested in fucking gold diggers. You think women should just be there to serve you, and then you're disappointed where all they want is your fucking money. Like,
right.
What?
They want something in return for
they
that.
They want something
How
in
dare
return.
They?
Like, oh, no. And then, oh, God. Okay. That's okay. a whole
right. Another
conversation. Yeah. About comics and women and their expectations of women.
Another week saw Joyce Carol Oates, the author, on Twitter. I think it was last week. She waded into the conversation about sensitivity readers. I don't want to give a shit ton of context to this. This woman is very tone deaf in her Twitter generally. The basic gist of her comment was like, nobody should censor writers. If you don't like what you see, don't read it. Don't buy it. Go start your own publishing house or magazine. I did it. And people of color were like, fuck you, bitch. All right. So white women, you need to stop. Okay. I mean, granted, this is coming from a podcast that is two white women talking about shit. So perspective, I get you, but like, try to have some circumspection. Just fucking try. Stop giving us all a bad name with this shit.
It's really embarrassing. And I also feel like when I have these moments mm-hmm. where I'm not understood, my first reaction is to go, God, can you imagine? It must be so much harder. Like, I'm able to like understand my privilege in these moments. And I feel like
yeah,
I'm working at it. Oh, Joyce Carol Oates, I know you're a good writer, but God, that doesn't make you the queen of everything. It doesn't, you know.
No. Okay, listeners. We know that some of you disagree with us. I know. Some of you liked The Last Jedi. Some of you loved it. And we are open to hearing your thoughts. We are. Mostly we want to hear your thoughts on how right we are. But no, we're open to everything. So reach out. You can email us anytime. We're saucepodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us. We're @saucepodcast. You can reach me directly. I'm GynoStar on Twitter. That's GynoStar. I'm also on Instagram and whatever other social media. Just search GynoStar. Maya, where can people get in touch with you?
MayaGarance.com. I have a performance in LA on January 20th. Come on out. I have another show that I'm part of that's opening up in Salt Lake City, Utah. At the
really?
End of January, yeah, at the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art, Utah MoCA, at the end of the month. So all of that shit is up on my website.
You
so
are busy.
Go visit my website, and I will tell you all about it. And then we're gonna have more stuff that we ruin for you, because that's another thing. Write us reviews and write to us. Tell us things that you would like us to break apart for you, and we will do that
yes.
for you.
So give us your thoughts on what you'd like to hear us take apart. And as Maya said, please give us a review on iTunes. Happy New Year, listeners.
We will see you next week.
Bye-bye.